To meet, I will call us to order. We will start as a subcommittee. A couple of our other members are chairing in other committees, and one of our members is out sick today. So we're a seven-member committee, and we will start as a subcommittee. We have five items on the proposed consent calendar. If you're here for any of those, we'd love to have you join us, but you don't have to stay because those measures are on the consent calendar. Item one, SAB 294 by Assemblymember Gibson. Item three, AB 308 by Assemblymember Manshine. Item five, AB 452 by Assemblymember Bloom. And item seven by Assemblymember Reyes. So if you're an odd number, you're in good luck today. And then number 10, AB 1516 by Assemblymember Cunningham. Those are the consent items, and when we get a quorum, we will vote on that consent calendar. With that, we turn to today's bills. We hear measures here in file order, which means that we will start with Assemblymember Manshine. This is AB 308 is on the consent. This is AB 309. In this committee, we generally have two witnesses who speak in support, 2 minutes each, and then we just call people up to give their name and affiliation. Then we will have two witnesses in opposition, 2 minutes each, and then those wanting to express their opposition also standing at the mic, giving name and affiliation. And with that, I would like to also indicate, thank you, that we did have a couple items that were pulled, so they are not being heard today and are not on consent. One is file item two, AB 299 by Assemblyman Calderon, and file item six, AB 712 by Assemblymember Bloom. Those matters have been pulled. I understand that we'll be hearing them at some other date. So with that, Assemblymember Manshine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. AB 309 seeks to give more realistic flexibilities for executing estate planning documents. Current law allows for the process of transferring property to a trust via the terms of a will. However, it requires the trust document be executed before or at the same time as the will. If the trust is executed after the will, the provision leaving property to the trust is rendered invalid. Scheduling issues like the unavailability of a notary to witness the execution of a trust can prevent the final wishes of the individual from being followed. AB 309 would allow a person to leave property to a trustee as long as the trust is executed within 60 days of the will being executed. It will be easier to carry out the individual's last wishes and will also bring the California Probate Code more in line with the Uniform Testamentary Additions to Trust Act. AB 309 is sponsored by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar of California, and here today to testify and also to answer any questions is Bart Shinoni.
Good afternoon, sir.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Bart Shinoni, and I practice law in the Trusts and Estates area with Temmerman, Seeley & Coleman, a San Jose firm, and I'm a member of the Executive Committee of the Trusts and Estates Section of the State Bar of California. I am happy to answer technical questions regarding this bill.
That's short and sweet. Is there anyone else here to speak in support of the measure? Seeing none, is there anyone in opposition to the measure? All right, with that, we'll bring it back to the dais. I just had a question, the 60-day number. My concern, and it may not be a valid one, but it does concern me, that we want to make sure that these items, when people are doing their testamentary planning, that there is some appreciation for the relationship, say, between a will and a trust and the different machinations that occur when one does an estate plan. And I'm wondering why the 60 days. I understand that sometimes, you know, documents have to be redone, but why not 15 days or 30 days? Where does the 60 days come from? Is it an arbitrary number, or is there some thought behind that?
Well, I think in large part, Madam Chair, it is a bright line, and any bright line is kind of an arbitrary time. Our original bill that we submitted did not have a date, and this bill comes before you with 60 days, which we feel we could live with because it certainly allows for 60 days from the date of the signing of the wills. Now, I think the issue we have here primarily comes up with estate planning for married spouses. Not only is there the notary problem, but we now have situations which my colleagues report, and which is going to become more frequent, where it's very difficult to schedule two spouses in at the same time to sign both the wills and the trust document together. One spouse will appear, sign the will, sign the trust document. The second spouse will appear at a later time, sign the will and the trust document. But technically, the question is, what date is that trust signed? And that gets to be a matter that could raise some problems, because strictly, if we use it as the later time, it is not consistent with Probate Code Section 6300. And we feel that this bill will be very helpful in alleviating that, whether we pick 60 days or another date.
Thank you. And as someone who has had that problem, not just because I'm here and my spouse is in the district, but because life's challenges frequently have us in different places, that makes some sense to me. Thank you very much. Senator Mawning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank the member for bringing this forward, and I'm supportive. I do just have kind of a follow-up question, though. I understand the benefit to be achieved. Is there any danger with a 60-day gap that a couple signs the will together, but one of the partners passes away before the trust is fully executed, but the couple thought or intended that at the will signing, they're empowering a trust instrument that ends up, I guess my question is, the bigger the gap, do you run the risk of an unintended consequence of a beneficiary not being protected?
Well, this does get to be in that unpredictable game of risk analysis. And clearly, if there is an infinite limit, I would say that that rears its ugly head more probable than a shorter one. You know, I think to a certain degree, you have to assume that things accord in an ordinary course, and that 60 days, for instance, is a reasonable time period. As a practitioner, if it were a situation where one of the spouses were terminal, obviously I would want to get this signed as soon as possible, regardless of whether it's 60 days or not. And actually, I would endeavor to have them sign it together because it's that important.
Right, and I think that's a satisfactory answer for me. And again, if one of the partners is terminal or they're both elderly, you're not going to maybe have the scheduling problems that you would with a younger professional couple. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions?
I'll move the item.
All right. That we will, at the appropriate time, entertain a motion. At the appropriate time, Senator Morlock will move the item, and we will vote on it at that time. Very good. Would you like to close?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members, and respectfully request an aye vote.
Thank you very much. And at the appropriate time, Senator Morlock will make the motion, and we will have the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Right now, we are zipping down to file item 8, Assemblymember Reyes. This will be AB 1139. Good afternoon. Nice to see you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. AB 1139 is a consumer protection measure that informs potential home buyers about private transfer fees and federal regulation that may affect their financing options. Private transfer fees are fees written in to the conditions associated with a parcel of land which require payment of a fee every time the title is transferred. At their best, these fees help raise the funds necessary to cover expenses associated with the development of the property and general upkeep. At their worst, these fees may be utilized to provide delayed profits to whoever is legally entitled to receive the payment. Starting in 2010, the Federal Housing Finance Agency began developing new regulations covering when Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the Federal Home Loan Bank may purchase mortgages on properties with a private transfer fee. These regulations became effective in 2011 and specify that these servicers cannot acquire mortgages unless the transfer fee provides a direct benefit to the property. Our bill simply requires disclosure to the potential homeowner that a property has a transfer fee attached to it and that federal housing agencies are prohibited from buying mortgages on properties with a private transfer fee if it does not provide a direct benefit. By disclosing this information, the bill ensures that potential home buyers are empowered with the information needed to make the best decision for themselves. Here to testify in support of AB 1139 is Christopher Carlisle with the California Realtors Association. In addition, in attendance is Andrew Antwi, here on behalf of Tejon Ranch to answer any questions regarding the latest amendments to the bill.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, sir.
Christopher Carlisle with the California Association of Realtors. The California Association of Realtors 10 years ago sponsored the legislation that now gives us the notice that goes to prospective home buyers, you know, payment of private transfer fee required. But it only provides the particulars of the notice, who's getting paid, the amount, what the funds are going to be used for. AB 1139 would modify that notice to also inform prospective home buyers about the FHFA and FHA regulations relating to private transfer fees and how those regulations may impair the ability to obtain financing. We ask for your aye vote on this measure.
Any other witnesses in support? Any witnesses in opposition? Boy, I have to say, I'm very impressed. The assembly comes in nice and clean, no opposition, no witnesses.
We try.
And they locked, we did, that's what we did. We locked the doors. That's a good tactic. Senator Mani.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank the author for bringing this forward. I'm fully supportive of what you seek to achieve. Just a question, once a prospective home buyer receives that notice, is there a way they can remove the encumbrance by paying up front so that they can then get the financing?
These things run in perpetuity, and that's one of the problems with it. It's not just that individual that's having to pay, it's every subsequent purchaser.
So it travels with the property.
Exactly.
So you can't remove it.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Mourning. Senator Moorlach.
I was really curious. I hadn't run into this in my private practice, so could you give me a couple examples of a property transfer? Pardon me?
Of where this has been used?
Yeah.
These first came to our attention about 10 years ago, right up in Roseville, and there was a developer that's going to be putting that in. Environmentalists showed up. There were some concerns that they had, and the developer says, well, how about if I just put a little fee on it to cover the environmental mitigation? And the developer likes it because they're not paying for it. This is also used up in Martis Valley, up in the foothills here. And it's usually used to benefit the property. But as Ms. Reyes described, it could be a private Tahiti vacation fund, for example.
I've never seen it. So then it's reliant on turnover of the property, or does the fee increase every year?
It's the only ones that we've seen have been are steady, and they're usually a percentage of the purchase price of the home.
But if it doesn't turn over at all?
If it doesn't turn over, then that doesn't generate any revenue for that third party.
Wow, okay, I've never encountered it.
Sorry. So I think part of the problem, too, is that up until recently, it was actually also done by developers to give them a little extra money as each time the property transferred. Then we recognized that was pretty outrageous and required, I think it was in 2011, that the fee had to have a direct benefit on the actual property itself, not to be an extra little slush fund primarily for the developer. But they do, right, they do, these do run with the land, if you will, so that they are required every time there is a transfer. But this legislation will at least notify the individual. And what it does is, without a direct benefit, it's very unlikely that one could get financing. So my question was, because this is somewhat unusual and a little bit arcane, most people don't think about it and certainly don't read the deeds and don't understand that if this does exist and they're not sure what direct benefit is, that they might not then, after they put a bid in and they plan to buy the property, find a lender won't lend. I'm wondering if the notification requirement here is sufficient to alert consumers to the potential problem. That does it act sufficiently? Is it a sufficient notice so that they understand what is at stake?
If I may.
Yeah.
As I said, 10 years ago, the California Association of Realtors sponsored the legislation that gives us the notice of payment of private transfer fee required. So title companies and realtors and whatnot have had 10 years of experience with this. So now we're going back and amending that very same notice and putting in this extra verbiage about the FHFA and FHA and how that might restrict your ability to get financing.
I think probably what would be best is to have a big sign in red that says, please contact an attorney or something to that effect. Because this is really, as you point out, this can be very challenging to someone who wants to buy property. Senator Mani.
As I understand it, these fees only defeat being eligible for a loan from these federal lenders that are identified. So presumably, with the notice, somebody knows right up front they're not going to be eligible. If they didn't read the notice and went to that federal lender, the federal lender's going to say, sorry, we're not going to make the loan. But because it's focused on these federal lenders, is it a fair assumption that you can still go to private lending institutions and qualify for a loan?
Theoretically, you'd have to, you know, what we're trying to avoid is you're getting into escrow and then, you know, your lender tells you, just as you've described, oh, by the way, you have a private transfer fee that doesn't provide a direct benefit and the person is left scrambling.
Heard it before.
Right. So, but theoretically, if they see that notice up front, they could make other arrangements.
And hopefully find
Hopefully.
Doesn't Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae operate on the secondary market as well? So they tend to buy those mortgages.
Right, right.
Are they able to buy the mortgage?
No, they cannot deal with those at all.
So even some of your private lenders aren't going to lend.
Right. Yeah. It would have to be entirely private.
Got it. Senator Moorlach.
So then how is the notice given?
It's in the preliminary title report.
So you'd almost have to open escrow before
you'd Right.
So wouldn't it be better to disclose that even before then? Wouldn't that be in the MLS information?
It's an interesting idea, one that I'm more than happy to look at. Obviously, earlier is better. Just so you know, we're forming a working group within CAR to look at these things some more. Just the discussion of this legislation sort of prompted some discussion about, well, what else should we be doing about these things?
Because entering escrow is like a massive decision, right? Yeah. It's like, okay, we'll put the down, and then you get this, and you go, oh, man, now
yeah.
What?
The problem is that there's no compendium of all the private transfer fees that are out there. There's no, other than the recording requirement, there's no place where all of that information is collected.
So we were looking for a home when my youngest son, who's now 26, he was 8 or 9. And we go into the sales room, and he says to the lady, real politely, he says, is this a Melrose? Because you know, if this is a Melrose, my dad is not buying a home here.
You taught him well.
Well, maybe the wrong Moorlach is in the legislature, huh? Another question that, has there, you know, to what extent is this a problem? Are there a number of these kinds of non-direct benefit costs still out there, or, you know, is it like 1 in every 1,000, or is it 50 in every 100, or do we have any idea how significant this problem is?
We have no idea. Again, there is no database of all the private transfer fees out there, and of those, which provide a direct benefit and which do not.
Well, I think that was a very interesting issue, perhaps, to pursue, not necessarily in this bill, but I agree. I mean, you put your heart and soul into something, you put your money down, you start incurring the expenses associated with a preliminary title report. It's not that this has changed. This probably has been here for several preceding sales. It'd probably be very helpful to have that information, which goes to my next question, which is what else could we be doing to protect consumers against, you know, these kinds of property transfer fees that don't have a direct benefit, that just simply benefit, as you say, the developer's trip to the Bahamas?
Right. Well, as I mentioned, we have, because of the discussion on this bill, we've formed an internal working group to actually look at banning these, making a second attempt. We tried 10 years ago. We're not able to get the votes from the majority party. When I tried to kind of come up with some compromise measure, I was famously told by then Assemblymember McClintock that I'd gotten pantsed. and having been around the Capitol, it is the first and only time that I was not able to get even a motion on a bill. So this is not an easy issue, and we'll see what our working group comes up
with. Well, perhaps the suggestion here of having that notice right up front might be helpful as well. So thank you for the legislation. Seeing no other questions, would you like to close?
Respectfully ask for your aye vote.
Thank you. And at the appropriate time, Senator Morlock will make the motion, and we will take a vote on that bill.
Thank you.
Very colorful language.
All right. Our last, or is it our last or our second to last item? It is our last item. Assemblymember Steinarth, AB 1148. And I understand there are some amendments that are being distributed as we speak, and I appreciate your willingness to work with us to make this at least what we hope is a better bill, but a good bill, a better bill. So with that, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. To start off, I will be accepting the committee's amendments. Protecting both disability access and small businesses is critical. In 2016, I authored AB 2093 to improve disability access on commercial properties. After discussions with the Assembly Judiciary Committee staff earlier this year, we introduced AB 1148. This bill attempts to clarify the language of AB 2093 to better define commercial property, which currently mistakenly includes properties which do not qualify for CASP, such as self-storage units. And for the most part, that's really what we're looking for with this bill. I'm open to answer any questions you have. I respectfully ask for your support.
Thank you. Witnesses in support. 2 minutes each, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senators, I'm Bob Raymer. I'm representing the California Building Industry Association.
Would you give us your name again now that the mic is on? So if there's anybody watching, they'll know who you are.
I'm sorry.
Unless
it's Bob Raymer with the California Building Industry Association, and I've also been asked to give a Me Too for the California Business Properties Association, and we agree with the staff analysis. I think the example that they use here is right on point, so unless there's any technical questions, we're in support.
Thank you. Next witness.
Good afternoon. Sherry McHugh, representing the Self-Storage Association. We thank the author and we thank your staff for working on the amendments. We are in strong support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Other witnesses in support? Any witnesses in opposition? We did a good job locking those doors. All right. Questions from the dais. I had a couple and a comment I wanted to make. You know, this has been for years a very emotional issue about making sure that businesses, commercial enterprises are ADA compliant. Disability community really has been very vocal, and I think appropriately so, in its desire to be able to live normal lives and to have access to the same things that everybody else does. We also have had some problems with different businesses that don't know that they aren't ADA compliant, and then having to go through the machinations associated with non-compliance. I happen to personally think that this effort to require CASPs and require that landlords make sure that their properties are compliant would have been the most direct and best approach, but That not having happened, and you know, there's just so many times you bang your head against the wall, realizing that we don't have that kind of requirement for landlords, property owners. We don't have that requirement so the tenants who are leasing out property know that they have those responsibilities as well. It's important to me that that we do work through this CASP program, which will provide the opportunity for whether it's the landlord or tenant to get a report to determine whether or not they are in compliance. It's important that we work at least with that aspect of notice. And I want to make sure that we don't just start pecking away at that requirement. And I know it makes no sense, really, if you have a private storage unit that you're not access, the public isn't going to access. It doesn't have to, you don't have to give notice because it's not open to the public. I'm wondering if there are any other, we were trying to figure out if there are any other examples where you have a property that is being rented out or leased out that is not going to be available to the public for which this would apply. I know you're representing your storage companies, so I'll ask the assembly member, are there any other instances that come to mind or that you've been made aware of?
No, not as clearly defined as a storage unit would represent. I do know that there is, in my notes, a discussion about some other place of public accommodation and the definition of lodging and how we want to clarify that as well. So if it's five or less units and the owner is also in residing in those units, that would not be exempt, but be exempt from the legislation that we're looking at. But aside from those, this would be applicable to most any other business or building that would have a traditional entity or business operating out of it.
So it's sort of a very indirect way to get at solving a problem, but it's the best that we've been able to do, I guess, from the policy political process.
So the first time we've really seen the disability community, the legal community, and the business community all work together to try and come up with, you know, a process that everybody agrees with, because I think we're all trying to achieve the same goal. We want access. We want every single person to access the businesses however is necessary. We want to eliminate unnecessary litigation, because that hurts the businesses, it hurts the disability community. We want to try and help the disability community so that they have the opportunity to be able to have the quality of life that they're looking for. So all three sides are looking at a benefit here. So I think it was good legislation when we introduced it originally. This cleanup legislation, I think, is also a good point to work on.
And I'll take that as your close.
Thank you very much.
So at the appropriate time, perhaps Senator Moorlach will move this bill as well when we get a quorum, and hopefully we'll get that because that's our last bill. Thank you very much for your work on this, and for the motion will be due pass as amended. Thank you. All right. So if we could, if there's anyone from the various offices of Senator Hertzberg, Senator Wykowski, or Senator Anderson, if they could notify them that it's we are done as soon as we can get our quorum and take the vote on all these measures. make your way immediately to room 112 so that you can participate. That would be greatly appreciated. With that, Madam Secretary, please establish a quorum.
Jackson?
Here.
Jackson here. Morlock?
Present.
Morlock here. Anderson? Hertzberg? Monning?
Here.
Monning here. Stern? Wachowski?
Here.
Wachowski here.
All right, we have three bills that we need motions on and the consent calendar. Let's start with the consent calendar. File items 1, 3, 5, 7, and 10 are on the consent calendar. Is there a motion? Moved by Senator Morlock. You're on a roll here. All right. Please call the roll on the consent calendar.
Jackson?
Aye.
Jackson, aye. Morlock?
Aye.
Morlock, aye. Anderson? Hertzberg? Monning?
Aye.
Monning, aye. Stern? Wachowski?
Aye.
Wachowski, aye.
All right. The consent calendar has 4 votes. We'll keep it open for another couple minutes while we go to the next items that are up. It's file item 4, AB 309. The motion is by Senator Morlock is due pass to the Senate floor. Please call the members.
Jackson?
Aye.
Jackson, aye. Morlock?
Aye.
Morlock, aye. Anderson? Hertzberg? Monning?
Aye.
Monning, aye. Stern? Wachowski?
Aye.
Wachowski, aye.
All right. That bill has 4 votes. We will hold the roll open very briefly. The next item up is file item 8. AB 1139 by Assemblymember Reyes. The motion by Senator Morlock is due pass to the Senate floor. Please call the absent members.
Jackson?
Excuse me, please call the roll.
Jackson?
Aye.
Jackson, aye.
Aye.
Morlock?
Aye.
Morlock, aye. Anderson? Hertzberg? Monning?
Aye.
Monning, aye. Stern? Wachowski?
Aye.
Wachowski, aye.
All right, that bill has 4 votes. We will hold the roll open briefly. The final item is file item 9 with amendments by Assemblymember 1148, Assemblymember Steinerth. The motion is due pass as amended to the Senate floor. Please call the roll.
Jackson?
Aye.
Jackson, aye. Morlock? Morlock, aye. Anderson? Hertzberg? Monning?
Aye.
Monning, aye. Stern? Wachowski?
Aye.
Wachowski, aye.
All right, that bill has 4 votes, and we will hold the roll open for another 5 minutes, and then we will adjourn. And open the vote up again, call the absent members. We'll start with the consent calendar. Please call the absent members.
Anderson? Anderson, aye. Hertzberg, Stern.
All right, that bill has five votes. We will hold the roll open for just another minute or two. Next item up is file item 4, AB 309. The motion is due pass to the Senate floor. Please call the absent members.
Anderson? Anderson, aye. Hertzberg, Stern.
That bill has five votes. We will hold it open for just another moment or two. Next is file item 8, AB 1139, Assemblymember Reyes. The motion is due pass to the Senate floor. Please call the absent members.
Anderson? Anderson, aye. Hertzberg, Stern.
That bill has five votes. We will hold it open temporarily. And the final item is file item 9, AB 1148, by Assemblymember Steinorth. The motion is due pass as amended to the Senate floor. Please call the absent members.
Anderson?
Aye.
Anderson, aye. Hertzberg?
Aye.
Hertzberg, aye. Stern?
All right, 6-0. That bill is out. We are going to call the items one last time.
I'm going to run up to
thank you.
Elections and close out the committee.
Well, can you wait 1 second? I'm going with you.
We're going to make this very quick. All right, let's go to the file item, the consent calendar. Excuse me. The vote count is 5-0. Please call the absent members.
Hertzberg?
Aye.
Hertzberg, aye. Stern?
All right, 6-0. That bill is out. Next, or that consent calendar is out. File item 4, Assemblymember Manshine. The vote count is 5-0. Due pass to the Senate floor. Please call the absent members.
Hertzberg? Hertzberg, aye. Stern?
That bill is out, 6-0. Next item is file item 8, AB 1139, by Assemblymember Reyes. The vote count is 5-0. Due pass to the Senate floor. Please call the absent members.
Hertzberg?
Aye.
Hertzberg, aye. Stern?
6-0. That bill is out. Is that a vote? File item 9. I believe Senator Hertzberg did vote on that, and Senator Stern is ill. So that bill, and I believe we called it out at 6-0. Thank you very much, Senator. It was a quick one today, so back to committee. And with that, we are adjourned.